Hello there, my name's Tom Barrett, I'm one of the ministers here at All Saints, and it's great that you can join us today for our second talk in our series, The Difference Jesus Makes. Now, some of you out there are people who follow Jesus and are members of All Saints, but I know that many others of you are curious observers, and we're really glad that you've joined us. You've come to the right place, this talk is for you. Today's talk is not a hard sell to try and convince you to become a Christian on the spot. But in this talk, I want to give you a glimpse of what it's like on the inside. A glimpse into the difference Jesus makes in the lives of those who follow him. And today, a glimpse into the difference Jesus makes when it comes to conflict. I have a question for you. Who do you think you are? That's a great line that comes up in classic arguments, isn't it? Who do you think you are? It's one of those rhetorical questions we throw out there when we think the other person sees themselves as something they're not. As we approach the topic of conflict today, I think that question actually points us to an important consideration. Who you think you are makes a big difference to the way you approach conflicts, a big difference to the way you deal with people in a disagreement. Now, conflicts come in lots of different shapes and sizes, don't they? Those of you who are married know that it doesn't take long for matrimonial bliss to become tainted by squabbles and disputes that need to be worked out. Those of you who are in the workplace will know how workplace conflict is a given, and some workplaces deal with it much better than others. Extended families can be places of great conflict. Then there's international conflict and there's tribal conflict. Tribal conflict actually doesn't only occur in far off exotic places. We have tribal conflict all around us. We often call it politics. A bunch of commentators have noticed recently at the level of politics and government how divisiveness and conflict seem to have skyrocketed in recent times. Of course, the Westminster system of government is built on the idea of there being a government and an opposition that will debate the issues. But it seems like what we've got more recently is a government and an opposition that simply want to destroy each other. I don't know if it struck you earlier this year when coronavirus first came along and offered a serious threat from the outside, how strange it was when the government and the opposition suddenly started agreeing on things. The opposition started waving through government legislation saying, yep, good idea, let's do that. Did it strike you how strange that was compared to what we're used to? Now, I don't need to tell you that the internet, which brings us information in large quantities and low quality, the internet likewise has brought us conflict in larger and larger quantities and lower quality. I thought this meme sums it up pretty well. But of course, conflict is not always a bad thing. There's definitely such a thing as good conflict, the kind of debate that leads to a better outcome than either side originally thought of. Sometimes conflict involves courageous people standing up to oppose something that is undeniably wrong. But even that good kind of conflict comes with dangers. It was the philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche, of all people, who said, "Whoever fights monsters should see to it that he does not become a monster." So there's no escape from conflict. Many of us are conflict avoiders, but that actually doesn't make the conflict go away. It just leaves it to fester most of the time. There's no escape from conflict, but the way we deal with it makes a huge difference. And so back to that question, who do you think you are? I want to suggest that it's the way we see ourselves that makes a big difference to how we behave in a conflict. And the way Jesus invites us to see ourselves equips us to handle conflict constructively. So today, let me tell you about who I think I am. I'm a follower of Jesus, and I want to tell you a bit about how Jesus invites me to see myself and the difference that makes in situations of conflict. I want to show you three pieces of the puzzle and the difference that they make. Now, here's the first thing that Jesus tells me about myself. Jesus tells me I am not the judge. As you probably know, the Bible's picture of the world is that there is a God who is the creator. There is a God who made all things and therefore owns all things. And therefore, he's the one in the rightful place to hold all people to account. There is someone who is rightfully the judge of all, and it's not me. The Bible tells me I am a creature, not the creator. And the other creatures don't, in the end, answer to me. Now, when you first hear the idea of God being the judge, you might think there's an oppressive idea. You might think of the idea of God as judge as a stick that religious people use to beat other people into submission. And I won't deny the sad truth that that sort of thing does happen. But actually, the Bible presents this idea as a humbling truth for Christian people. We read a couple of Bible passages earlier today, and you might have noticed that these passages were full of instructions or even commands. And I want to say, if you're a curious visitor today, I'm not here to give you commands. I'm not here to tell you to do anything, actually. Those instructions that we read in the Bible to Christian people, they're given to Christian people to tell us how to follow Jesus faithfully. But if you're a curious visitor, I want to invite you to look at these commands like a tourist would look at a monument or something. Just inspect them and see what lies behind them. One of our readings today was from the book of Romans, near the end of that book, and we saw some instructions that it gave Christian people on the topic of conflict. It says, "Do not repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Do not take revenge, my dear friends, but leave room for God's wrath. For it is written, 'It is mine to avenge. I will repay,' says the Lord." The picture here is God is the judge. God is the one whose job it is to sort out those who do evil, which means that job is not mine. This understanding of myself leads to restraint. Now, Australians have traditionally had a reluctance to pass judgment. I think it comes from our tall poppy syndrome as much as anything else. But these days, when you read through the newspaper opinion columns, when you listen to the big name hosts on commercial AM radio, when you scroll through the musings of a million and one commentators on Facebook and Twitter, it seems to me that traditional reluctance to judge has long gone. The age of outrage is in. And if I was convinced that there was no judge in heaven, then when I'm confronted with someone else doing what I think is wrong, I'm much more inclined to pile on and sort them out myself, whether I have an accurate picture of the situation or not. But wouldn't the internet look different if it was run on a shared understanding that only God is the judge? How many lives which have been destroyed by online shaming could have been saved if everyone on Twitter acted on the basis that only God is the judge? If I'm not the judge, that empowers me to show restraint in a conflict. Restraint doesn't mean I don't ask questions. Doesn't mean I can't express concerns. But it means that I won't jump in a flash to condemnation and retribution. That's the first difference that Jesus makes. He tells me that I am not the judge, and that leads to restraint. Of course, sadly, the world does not run on the understanding that God only is the judge. None of us lives that way consistently. And that's true for non-religious and religious people alike. All of us do put ourselves on the judgment throne that belongs rightfully to God. All of us fail, and fail badly. Christians know this. We know this not just by looking at the world around us. We know this also by looking at ourselves and the inconsistencies and the contradictions in our lives. And we also know it because the Bible tells us. We read earlier from the book of Romans, and earlier on in that book, in chapter 3, the writer is summing up the situation of the human race. And his conclusion about the human race is this. There is no difference between different groups of people, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. That, in the end, is the Bible's analysis of the human race. All have sinned. All of us have failed to recognize that only God is God. But only some of us will admit it. Jesus once told a story about this topic. You can read the story in Luke's Gospel, chapter 18. Today I'm going to retell it to you in some slightly different words. Jesus told a story about two men. They go to the temple to pray to God. One of the men was a religious leader, and the other man was a people smuggler. The religious leader strides into the temple, stands up confidently and prays, "God, I thank you that I am not like other people, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even this people smuggler. I get up at 5 a.m. every day to read the Bible, and I give 10% of my income to good causes." But the people smuggler, he stood at the edge, stood at the distance. He wouldn't even look up to heaven, but he beat his chest and said, "God, have mercy on me, a sinner." Jesus said it's this man, the people smuggler, rather than the other one, who God is satisfied with. Jesus says the one who acknowledges himself as a sinner is the one who's doing the right thing. Because the truth is, we are all failures. Followers of Jesus see ourselves as those who have failed badly. It's not just that we're not perfect. Everyone agrees that no one is perfect. The Christian view of ourselves goes beyond that. As a follower of Jesus, I know and admit that I have failed badly. My purpose on this earth was to love God and reflect his love to the world. But what I do so much of the time is ignore God and exploit other people. I have failed badly. That's what Jesus tells me about myself. And when you see yourself as someone who has failed badly, that affects the way you treat other people in a conflict. It means that no conflict is a simple contest between goodies and baddies. Yes, there are still good actions and bad actions. There are still good outcomes and bad outcomes. But the world is not divided up into good people and bad people. All have fallen short. And so when I confront someone who's doing wrong, I do it as someone who also does wrong. And that brings a humility into a conflict situation. It means I might ask myself the question, is that person doing something that's actually outright wrong or just something I don't like? In today's culture, we are better and better at demonizing those on the other side of a struggle. On a whim, I searched Facebook for the phrase "detestable human being" just to see what people are saying about detestable human beings. Sure enough, it's used by right-wing and left-wing activists alike. Some are saying President Trump is a detestable human being. Some say President Obama is a detestable human being, and so on and so on. You won't find me using that phrase because I know it applies to me as much as anyone else. Jesus shows me that I have failed badly. I fail badly in the area that counts the most, in my relationship with my Maker. And so that brings a bit of humility in conflict with others. So let's recap a bit. As a follower of Jesus, Jesus invites me to see myself in a particular way. And that self-perception makes a difference in situations of conflict. Jesus shows me that I am not God, I am not the judge, which leads to a bit of restraint. And Jesus shows me that I am someone who has failed badly. That leads to a bit of humility. Now there's a third piece of the puzzle, which is maybe the most powerful of all. Jesus shows me that I am someone who has been forgiven at great cost. Now there are two ways a conflict can end. One is where one side beats the other side into defeat or even destruction, so that the other side is no longer willing or able to continue the fight. That's how wars are fought. The other way it can end is reconciliation. Now, reconciliation is tremendously hard and costly. It's not the same as a stalemate. In a stalemate, the conflict is not over. It's just been put on hold. In a reconciliation, the conflict is over without anyone being defeated or destroyed. And the outrageous thing Christians believe is that God, who could have simply squashed us when we rejected and rebelled against him, God instead pursued reconciliation. As a Christian, I see myself as someone who's been forgiven at great cost. The Bible shows me how my rejection of God, my putting myself in God's place, is not just a bit of bad manners that can be overlooked. The Bible's perception is that human rejection of God is a great evil, which has led to terrible consequences in the world and can't just be swept under the carpet. If God is a fair judge, then there's a penalty that has to be paid. And the Bible says that penalty is death. Not just limited lifespan, but being eternally shut out from the presence of God and his life-giving goodness. But the outrageous thing is that in the work of Jesus, God is willing to take that death penalty on himself. We're going to look at the book of Romans again. Chapter 5 of Romans says this: "You see, at the right time, while we were still powerless, Christ died for the ungodly." Very rarely will anyone die for a righteous person, though for a good person, someone might possibly dare to die. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this: while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. In the death of Jesus, we see God paying our debt. We see God taking the initiative for reconciliation. He didn't wait till we asked for help. While we were still God's enemies, he did what was needed for reconciliation. He made the first move. He bore the cost. Christian writer John Stott explains the death of Jesus in this helpful way. He says, "The essence of sin is man substituting himself for God, while the essence of salvation is God substituting himself for man. Man asserts himself against God and puts himself where only God deserves to be, but God sacrifices himself for man and puts himself where only man deserves to be." If I see myself as someone who's been forgiven by God at such a great cost, the cost of the life of Jesus, that changes how I engage in conflict. That empowers me to forgive other people as I've been forgiven, even when that comes at a great cost to me. In recent times, people without any particular religious convictions have been tuning in to the value of forgiveness. Psychologists have been recognizing how much cost there is in carrying a grudge for years. But I think it's easy for us to miss the fact that there is also a great cost in letting go of the grudge. There's also a great cost in extending forgiveness. It's costly and difficult to forgive someone. But when I have a sense of how much God has given to me in forgiving me, that empowers me to be generous and forgive other people. Now, reconciliation doesn't always succeed. The offer of forgiveness has built into it the claim that something wrong has been done. And sometimes the other person won't accept that claim and forgiveness is not accepted. But when I see myself as someone who's been forgiven by God at great cost, that makes me willing to take the first step, to be prepared to bear the cost of forgiving other people, not to wait for them to try and make it right. Knowing the generosity of God enables me to be generous to other people. Jesus brought out this connection in the passage that we read from the book of Matthew, chapter 5. Jesus said to his followers, "You have heard that it was said, 'Love your neighbor and hate your enemy.' But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous." Now, Christians, sadly, frequently fail in this call. That was kind of my second point, wasn't it? And yet, when you dig around, you can find amazing stories of people living out this command to love their enemies. There are stories from Christians who were in Nazi concentration camps, finding the strength to forgive the guards. There's a story from last year in the States where the brother of an African-American man who was wrongfully shot and killed by a white police officer publicly forgave and embraced her, all because of the difference that Jesus made in his life. I don't know of any other philosophy, any other religion or worldview that gives you this kind of basis for loving your enemies. Lots of people can see how conflict is destructive and it's good to find ways to cool it down. But I don't see what can empower you to love your enemies better than the sight of God the Son sacrificing his life for the sake of reconciliation. That's the difference Jesus makes. Now, are you a curious visitor? I hope that today I have stoked your curiosity. Like a tourist who goes around and inspects the artifacts and the lifestyle of an unfamiliar culture, I hope that today you've been able to spot some distinctive things. And I hope that like a tourist who decides to extend their stay or buy a thicker guidebook, I'm hoping that I might have prompted you to want to dig in further. You might have questions about what I've said today, or objections to the claims I've made. I'd love to continue that conversation. I'd love to hear your feedback in general. And here at All Saints, we'd love to help you explore the Christian faith for yourself. Last week, we began a little course called Alpha, and it's not too late to join it. It's running on Thursday nights, continuing this Thursday. Alpha is a chance to watch a little film that explores an aspect of the Christian faith, and to chat about what you think about it. You can ask all your tricky questions. You can just listen if you want. It's a safe place to think aloud and figure out what you make of it all. So if you're interested in that, please head over to allsaintsepping.org/alpha and you can sign up to join in from this Thursday. Thanks a lot for listening today. I look forward to hearing your thoughts, and continuing to explore with you the difference that Jesus makes.